I think the peer support model supports how first responders work, which is ground up a lot of the time. And then the top down has to be supporting what the needs are.
There's nothing to be ashamed of, embarrassed about, if your job, which is brutal, starts to have an effect on you.
Another interesting point that I don't think we've ever really made here, I have some clients who come to me and they use work as their coping skill.
You do need to take care of your mental health as much as your physical health. And let's not forget spiritual health. If you start having symptoms and you're ignoring them, it is going to impact, you know, how you can perform at work, and absolutely is going to affect your family and your friends.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience, along with my co-host, Dr. Stacey Raymond and Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW EMT. I'm David Dashinger. In this episode, we'll be taking you to the EMS and Fire Pro Expo at Foxwoods Casino, Connecticut, this past October, where we had several professionals from first responder community speak about mental health. We'll be looking at clips from that conference and talking about topics that our guests are discussing right after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job.
In this family, up to a quarter of 911 telecommunicators have symptoms of post-traumatic stress.
In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis,
while responders are quietly suffering.
In this family, many struggle with job-related stress,
burnout, trauma, sleep disruptions, substance abuse,
and relationship problems.
In this family, we can help the helpers.
With vital information and resources,
resilience strategies,
and success stories of overcoming the obstacles.
In this family, no one is alone.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacey Raymond, and Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW EMTB.
So in this episode, we're going to be presenting some short interviews that Bonnie did at the EMS and Fire Pro Expo at Foxwoods Casino in Connecticut this past October. And Bonnie, can you give us a little bit of background on the booth, the event, and those clips that we're going to show?
Sure. So we ran the booth through the Fairfield County Trauma Response Team, which the three of us are a part of. And it was very exciting because we had exposure to thousands of EMS and fire professionals statewide. And there were others that also were there from other parts of the country, which was really interesting. It's a wonderful event for those of you who haven't gone. It's a great opportunity to network. Walking around the exhibit hall is amazing because you get to see other groups that are providing services to first responders, but you get to check out rigs, equipment. It's a lot of fun, and they do a great job too, because it's a good balance of professional networking, but also there's a social component to it. And so at night there'll be dinners and live concerts. So it was a really great opportunity for us to be there to talk about mental health. And something that was very surprising to me was the amount of people that did not walk past our booth. You know, most people, and I really mean it, most people stopped, truly asked who we are, what we were doing. And once we started to talk about it, they were taking the card off the table, taking the flyers for group. People seemed very thirsty for the knowledge. And I would say it was both fire and EMS, pretty equal. You know, the other booths around us as well were very interested in what we were doing. People couldn't say enough about how needed this is and thank you. And yeah, they were just very, very happy to hear about what we're doing. And that felt really great, just knowing the stigma that we battle on the show, but just outside in the world. And I can truthfully tell you, I didn't feel the stigma for 3 days while I was there. I never felt it once.
Wow.
Right. And this is part of a transition period for the Fairfield County Trauma Response Team, going from a county-based service to a statewide-based service. Can you speak to that?
Sure. It was interesting because a couple of people had come over, probably more than a couple, but they looked up at the sign and said, oh, Fairfield County, sorry, I'm in Northwestern Connecticut. This won't help me. No. And we stopped them and said, no, hold the phone. We're in the infancy of the expansion plan, really in the infancy of it. And we want to do it in a smart way so that we are expanding and maintaining our reputation, which really is out there. So the message that we sent to those people was, hang tight, you know, we're working on our plan. We are eventually going to get there. But in the meantime, here's the information for our podcast, which is free, and you can access that for support or many topics that you might be struggling with. And then we gave them our group information for the Tuesday night and the Friday group. And we explained you can join that from anywhere in the country. And it's free peer support, confidential. So it was nice to be able to say we have a plan in place and that we have these other resources you can avail yourself of in the meantime.
Okay. And Stacy, can you speak to what the Fairfield County Trauma Response Team does, what kind of services it offers, and also the peer support group?
If any department asks us to help them teach about post-traumatic stress, we usually regard it as an injury, not as a disorder. We will come to your department for free. We will work with your schedule. So if it's shift work, we will make sure that every shift has the experience to listen to our presentation. It's like a 45-minute presentation. We open it up to questions. But we speak about the symptoms of post-traumatic stress, kind of the wear and tear of the first responder job on the brain. Right? It eventually can result in an injury and certain patterns of behavior. And we talk about ways to deal with that. We identify, you know, the symptoms. How do you know if you have symptoms? When should you go and get help? What kind of help is out there? We are all trained in something called EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And it is a very quick and efficient approach to post-traumatic symptoms, as well as depression and anxiety or panic. But it may eliminate the need for someone to go on medication. It can help someone with their, if they have a substance abuse problem, if they have interpersonal issues, because, you know, maybe they're now isolating themselves because they have a short fuse. They can't handle, any extra stimuli. You know, they're kind of just going through the motions. That's what we want, you know, first responders to know. Like, if you have any of these issues, we can, or someone else trained in EMDR, it doesn't have to be us. There's about 24 of us that are on the team, can help you very quickly and efficiently resolve your symptoms. So we just, you know, we want to get that message out there. And also, if there is a community-wide tragic event like a Sandy Hook, we will offer any first responder 3 free EMDR sessions just to kind of get the ball rolling on their healing. And the reason for that is because you want to get in there and extinguish the what might take root as post-traumatic stress if the first responder does not do something about it right away. Mm-hmm. So within a matter of a few sessions, you can nip it in the bud, and then it never grows into anything more serious. So so we offer those 3 free sessions if there is a community-wide event. And you also asked, David, about the group. Bonnie and I have been running this group since November of 2018. We started with 3 first responders. It's free to first responders. When COVID hit, we went fully online on Zoom, and now we offer a hybrid. So Bonnie has a nice group room in Wilton, plenty of space, comfortable. We have coffee and donuts, and her coffee is exceptional. The donuts are exceptional too, because they're gourmet. So you don't want to miss that. But if you have to miss that, you know, you can join us on Zoom.
It's supply your own donuts.
You can buy your own tin. It's 10 o'clock till 11:30, but we don't hold people to that. You don't have to show up every Friday. Show up when you can, if you need to go, or if you need to sign in at, you know, come on and join us at 10:30 instead of 10 o'clock. We have first responders that are in their patrol cars, or, you know, in their ambulance, and they will sign in. So, and if something happens and they need to go, we totally understand that. So there's another group that happens just virtually, and that's Tuesday evenings at 7:30 p.m. So in case the Friday 10 a.m. time doesn't work for you, we also offer an evening option. Bonnie and I do not run that group, but we have another Fairfield County Trauma Response Team member who co-leads it with a first responder who's looking to, I believe, finalize his social work degree.
Come on. Check it.
Just to recap, it's a virtual and in-person peer support group, and it's not just people in Connecticut. We have people coming from all different states, right?
Absolutely. And
all different professions, right? Fire, police, EMS, animal control, corrections. On and on, right? And how can people find that if they want to attend the group or get more information? What's the best way to do that?
We can post our email addresses here at the end of the show, and you can reach out to us directly. Because it's confidential, we don't blast the link out to everybody. So you have to ask for the link, and you can receive that, and you'll be added to the email list, which goes out weekly. It's a blind email list, so we regard confidentiality very much. And I can honestly say we haven't had a breach. The people that come to group truly get their needs met, whether it's discussing something professionally or personally. And it truly is confidential. There's no judgment. Everyone leaves their judgment at the door. And truthfully, to watch a group of people from all branches of first responder world be there for each other and find a common ground is truly beautiful. And I think the mix allows for teaching. It allows for one branch of the culture to understand another branch or to ask questions that they normally may not ask. There are a lot of similarities, but there are a lot of nuances in each branch of first responder world. And it's really beautiful to watch the vulnerability that we have built in the group. You know, people are able to really bare their soul and get what they need from everyone else. And it's very uplifting to watch and to witness. You know, we're there as the clinical people to jump in here and there, but it truly is peer-to-peer support.
First responders are invited to just come and check us out too. It's not like the spotlight will be on you and you have to share. Right. You can just listen, you know, maybe we'll ask you for your name and where do you work, but that's it. And you can just observe. There was something else I was going to say.
Well, I also wanted to add to that, you know, it's not all just trauma and drama. There is some levity, right? Some comedy. You guys know how to lighten things up at certain times. And there's definitely some great, back and forth that goes on too. So it's not all serious all the time. There's a lot of great positive interactions. And as far as the Friday group goes, the other thing that comes out of it is it seems like there's stories. You see the trajectory of somebody's progress as they're moving through their challenges in mental health. And it's so uplifting, I think, for everybody in the group to be able to be part of that, or at least to be an observer to see, you know, what's possible and how people are going and getting mental health help, whether they're doing EMDR, or they're seeing a culturally competent therapist. It's really inspiring to see some of the evolution of different people in the group as they go on their journey.
And it really is attendee focused. So Stacy and I don't come every week with a pre-planned topic and we must discuss this today. Mm-hmm. We very much let it be where the group is at. So if someone comes in and they're really, really struggling, let's say a coworker completed suicide or something's happened with their child or their spouse, we allow that person the airtime to talk about what's on their mind because it's not our group. It's not our time to make lessons and feel good about ourselves. It's our time to give them the time and the space, which they often do not get and are not afforded really at their workplace and sometimes in their family. But we give them the time and the space and the respect to share their story. And chances are someone else in the group has a similar story or can understand what's happening and really provide something very uplifting to that person, advice.
Why don't we move into the clips and go through those and we'll comment on them. So we're going to start with this first clip with Todd Donovan from the EMS and Fire Pro Conference, Foxwoods Casino.
Well, I want to thank you first for the opportunity to be able to talk to you. My name is Todd Donovan, and I'm on the National Alliance of Mental Illness Board of Directors in Cancer. I'm also a retired lieutenant paramedic of 32 years. What I want you to know is, how many times have you been asked, what's the worst thing you've ever seen? And we always know that that's a question we're going to get at a party or something to someone who's never been a first responder. But it's not necessarily what you've seen. It's what you've heard. It's what you've touched. It's what you've smelled. And hopefully not what you tasted, but it's possible. And all of those things are stored in memories and can be triggered by a variety of things. For me personally, the smell of burnt fruit brings back really bad memories. And it goes through a variety of pathways to the brain, but one of those pathways is the prefrontal cortex, where mood is regulated. And it's no wonder why first responders have high alcoholic rates, high drug abuse, infidelity. All of these things point to post-traumatic stress injury and post-traumatic stress disorder. And there are people that are dedicated their lives, their careers, to helping people like you and me. And I want to ask you, if you're not doing well, please reach out and find the help that you need.
Stacy, why don't you give us some sort of reflection on what Mr. Donovan's saying there?
Sure. I think he nailed it. You know, it isn't just what first responders see. I think in the case of especially EMTs, paramedics, you know, sometimes the response of the family that is, you know, as their loved one is being loaded into the ambulance. We recently did a debrief at a local police department. And unfortunately, the news of their loved one after they had arrived at the hospital, the ER, it came back over the airways, and the police were securing the scene and making sure that the family was okay, that she had passed. And, you know, so in this case, it wasn't the EMTs and the paramedics, it was the police that had to, you know, they hear the death wail. They're seeing these family, some of the family members pass out. So it's what they hear. It's what they smell. Like in the case of firefighters, you know, as he commented, you know, the smell of burnt fruit is a trigger for him to go back to a horrible memory. Mm-hmm. I worked with firefighters that, you know, the smell of burnt flesh is something that lingers for them. And it's, but you know, there are ways to, through therapy, to kind of unplug that in the brain. So that's what I support everything that he said.
I do too. And, you know, just with my own EMS background, there are certain sounds and body feelings and smells that you have to remember your average civilian will never experience those in the same way that we do, you know, to be with someone in the moment they find out their child has passed away. You know, in those moments, your average person doesn't ever have to be involved in that. But those moments do stick with you. The wailing, the primal screams and primal cries that happen only in those depths of horror for a human is something that first responders have to hear many times over the course of a career, right? And I think there's a feeling of not wanting to let go for that person. You know, you want to honor how they felt, and in a way you want to hold onto those memories on their behalf, but in a way it obviously can be damaging to a first responder, especially if it's untreated and you're talking about adding that to the other pile that they may already have.
I think there's, in those moments, there's more of a risk for them to, they have to compartmentalize, right? They have someone who grieving, and the initial shock actually is the first stage of grief. So that, mm-hmm. to experience someone who's in that phase, they have to put their own feelings on hold, and they know how to do that instinctively. Mm-hmm. It's what concerns us is that they don't want to tap back into that. You know, they want to avoid it. They want to keep it under wraps. Well, that does accumulate. And eventually that closet in your mind with sights, sounds, smells, sensations, that closet gets full, and it will eventually, if you've been exposed to enough, it will impair your ability to sleep first and foremost, your ability to do your job, interact with your family. It may lead to, as he was pointing out, substance use, infidelity, and other issues, So before that happens, this is why we as a team, Fairfield County Trauma Response Team, we will go to any department in the state of Connecticut and educate them on what are the signs and symptoms, and when is a good time to go and get help.
Right. The other thing that he touched on, and you just mentioned it too, is the maladaptive coping skills, right? The drug use, the promiscuity or infidelity, all of those things happen because of the culmination of all of the difficulty. And the other thing I think that Stacy and I would want people to know is we have protocols in EMDR therapy where we can treat someone immediately. We don't have to wait until you are months or years deep in something. So if you're exposed to one of these really extreme and difficult cases, you can do EMDR on it pretty much right away with a protocol called RTEP. And we both use it all the time, mm-hmm. and we see great results with it. And it really takes care of something before it has to riddle someone.
Fairfield County Trauma Response Team is a nonprofit alliance of mental health professionals dedicated to helping first responders heal from trauma, tragedy, and stress. We help as they manage community crises and the everyday demands of ensuring public health and safety. Established in 2011, FCTRT was formed in response to a call for emotional help from the Stamford Fire Department after a traumatic fatal fire. Less than a year later, the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting occurred, and members again served the first responder community. Most recently, COVID-19 created a need for our support. We provide free educational presentations, pro bono sessions to deal with community disasters, and an extensive referral service to trauma-informed psychotherapists. If you're a responder in Fairfield County and need help dealing with duty-related stress, please reach out to us so you can continue to do the job you love. Visit our website at fctrt.org or find us on Instagram at Fairfield County TRT.
That was a great discussion around that clip. So let's queue up the next one.
What do you want first responders to know about first responder mental health?
I think that I want them to know that their mental health is a priority that they should consider as important as physical health, as spending quality time with the people that they love and anything else that they value. Your mental health needs to be prioritized. You've got to find the time to make it as important as it needs to be. You deserve that.
Okay, so Bonnie, you want to introduce that that person and talk about that clip?
So that is Lee Goodman. She's the former chief of Trumbull EMS here in Connecticut, and she has been a champion of our team and of mental health for first responders. She spoke about it there, just how it has to be a priority, and I think she really gets it. And she's one of those people that's very verbal about it, verbalizes it to whoever will listen. And I think that her message is pretty poignant and succinct, which is you have to prioritize it. And, we try to get people to think preventatively rather than putting out the fires. Let's figure it out before it happens. Mm-hmm. And so if there's anything you can take from what Lee said is start thinking about prevention.
And let's also point out that, you know, why is it that mental health is like the least tended to part of one's health? And that does come to the stigma that, you know, first responders, many of them, most of them are strong emotionally, mm-hmm. right? They wouldn't have taken on these positions unless they were. And so when the brain is now impacted as it can be from, trauma after trauma, as they respond in their work day, they start to feel the symptoms of post-trauma. And I think it's an element, it brings up shame or disappointment in oneself. And that's really unfortunate, because these are the very people, first responders, that, you know, we need them to be 100%. We need them to be, you know, sharp, speaking from the public's view, and also their family needs them 100%. So there's nothing to be ashamed of, embarrassed about, if your job, which is brutal, you know, with regard to trauma exposure, starts to have an effect on you. It doesn't mean that you weren't meant to be a first responder. It's just that, okay, now it's, you may need to start thinking about, how do I empty that closet? How do I deal with the stuff that I've tucked away? Rather than put yourself down and look at yourself as weak, just because now your brain is having a normal response to an unusual circumstance. The lay public isn't really exposed. I think it's three or four times in one's lifetime that a lay person, or a civilian, is exposed to a traumatic event. Whereas, you know, it's sometimes a couple times a day, right, for a first responder. So you need to just be realistic about how this is likely going to impact you. And yes, you do need to take care of your mental health as much as your physical health. And let's not forget spiritual health as well.
Yeah, I take away, you know, self-care, proactive self-care, ideally. But we're so busy taking care of everybody else and getting the job done that we forget to take care of ourselves. And then there's that burnout factor, the working extra shifts and overtime shifts, and right, getting to the point where there's no time and space to do anything to fill our own buckets, to nurture our own selves and to do something that's going to be beneficial for us. So it's a practice and a discipline to get into that mode, but it's so important.
You know, another interesting point that I don't think we've ever really made here, I have some clients who come to me and they use work as their coping skill. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like a reverse way of looking at it. You would think that someone would want to be at work less if it was providing stress for them. But for some of the first responders, they go to work even more to fill the extra time, because in the extra time, they don't want to deal with the demons that are trying to surface. Mm-hmm. So it creates this vicious cycle, because they're working to avoid, but then working more hours is exposing them to more trauma.
Exactly.
So here's our next clip.
What do you want first responders to know about first responder mental health?
Well, the most important thing is that it's available, and it's good to reach out and get some support after a traumatic event in your profession.
Stacey, thoughts on that one?
Yeah, so he says it's good to reach out. I think that's, a big ask. If done right, you know, departments have in place a peer support team. They have in place individuals that are trained on that peer support team to do CISDs, critical incident stress debriefings. There is a right way to do those debriefings. And if they are done correctly, it can stave off the need for therapy down the road. Those debriefings are not therapy, but, you know, it's an opportunity for that shift. And what I enjoy is if it's multidisciplinary, you have the dispatcher or dispatchers that had to deal with the call. You have police, fire, EMS come together and go around the room and say, okay, what was your role at this incident? And it fills in the blanks for a lot of the other people that came in later or left earlier for the, because of this, the scene, they had to go to the hospital to stay with the victim or the, you know, the perpetrator, whatever the case may be. And it has, I think, it gives some closure to, to people that had the first responders that responded. So he's suggesting reach out. And look, if there are first responders that are willing to do that, that's awesome. But I think in general, I don't think we're there yet. I mean, I certainly wouldn't discourage it. But, you know, one step toward being proactive is where you have a good working peer support team that takes notice and, you know, if necessary, approaches people that had just been on that bad call and ask, you know, how are you doing? Just so you know, we're having a debrief. We're putting that together so that we can find the right time so that most people can attend.
I actually took what he said in two ways. So I took it as him giving first responders permission to reach out, right? To hear that from someone who's seasoned, who's been around a long time in the fire service, like he has, to be given that permission is huge and really new on the scene, if we think about it. And the other way that I take it is reaching out to your people. You know, a leader could listen to that and say, wow, I need to really reach out to my people. Or a shift commander or whoever. And part of that debriefing that you were saying before, one of the things I love to see is the amount of unknown that happens in some of these calls because they're so high stress and there are so many players involved and moving parts. We don't get to see the whole thing. And so I think to revisit it after the fact, to figure out what the unknown was for you, you know, an example of that could even be maybe an officer felt like they were left on scene too long and it was really bothering them. And maybe they go to the debriefing and their superior's in the debriefing and says, you know, what really bothered me was that I had to leave you there that long. I was trying to get coverage. I was trying to call somebody in from home to get there to relieve you. I just couldn't get in there. Or we had four other calls going on. That's such an important moment because otherwise outside of a debriefing, you wouldn't have that kind of vulnerable talk and the going back. So those moments allow people to reach across rank, which is very, very crucial. And we've talked about that here, but you're human being to human being in that room. The rank for the most part gets left at the door. Unless it's helpful, right? So to hear your supervisor saying, I really cared about you and that really hurt me, you know, that really would flip how that officer felt being left there. And maybe the resentment can now go away.
True. And it strengthens the teamwork.
Yes.
You know, and that sense of family, like that we're here for each other.
Right.
Yeah. And the sense of closure or completion, just getting more of a 360 degree view of the incident and everybody's role in it. There's parts of the team could be a dispatcher who initially dispatches and gets, sporadic radio traffic, but they're really not on scene and seeing and hearing all the details. They may get to see a bigger picture, or someone that has to depart the scene transporting patient to the hospital, but the incident scene continues after that. They don't get to know what the result was on scene. So I think that's a really valuable experience for the whole team that was involved in a particular incident.
thing I want to throw in here, because I, you know, there is, I think, some distorted views about debriefs, especially ones that have not been run well. Mm-hmm. It is very important not to go into gory details so that we do not either re-traumatize or cause trauma for anybody in the room. So, you know, if it was a particularly disturbing scene, the leader of the debriefing will say, we will just refer to them as the victim, or that, you know, there were injuries that were beyond survival, but to just leave the details out, because it's really not necessary. And we, like I said, we do not want to either trigger someone who saw that, heard that, or traumatize someone who did not see it or hear it or smell it, you know?
Right.
So,
yeah.
If you can embrace the concept and the idea of gratitude, so many things will begin to unfold in front of you. So many doors will open, so many windows open, the sun will shine in. Gratitude is really the go-to for so many different things. And it's free, right? Like, we don't have to have a physical thing in our presence to be able to use that as a positive intervention. You just have to open your heart and your mind. And if you can share that gratitude with others, you'll be benefiting yourself, but at the same time, benefiting others in the process, right? And then the biggest piece of gratitude, which is probably the hardest, is to allow people to show gratitude towards you. And if you can just embrace that, open your heart and let it in. But what's so important is to remember, they are feeling good about themselves if you let that gratitude in.
So the next clip up is with TJ Wayne from the EMS Fire Pro conference.
What do you want first responders to know about first responder mental health?
I think it's probably one of the most important facets of us as a whole, especially in the healthcare profession or first responder field, that isn't paid attention to. I think that we're slowly putting more time into making us better and putting time into ensuring that this is paid attention to, but it's going to take a full reflection or specific approach on saying, hey, I want to pay attention to this, and this is a real thing. So very similar to any type of psychomotor skill we do in a scholastic environment, we're taking time to focus on this. I think that mental health needs to have the same attention, which we'll get there, but it requires the understanding that this is a dynamic or an actual facet that should have the time.
Yeah, I agree with TJ. I think it is a slow process, right? Like anything, any changes that would happen in first responder departments, the police, fire, EMS, mental health is, you know, once it takes root, it's going to be slow growing. But I do see the positive effects happening. It's going to be based on buy-in, you know. So for those individuals that have gone for help and have had a successful outcome, and them spreading the word, I think it's going to, you know, happen from the ground up. And then it definitely, in order to push it along, it has to have command staff support.
I agree. And I think that what we're seeing is that the stigma is slowly changing and going away, but each department is different in that regard. Some are way ahead of the game. Some are, you know, in our view, a bit behind the game. But certainly as peer support teams have gotten up and running, you know, that's been a huge, I think, facet that's being addressed. And TJ is on the peer support team at his department. And I think those peer support teams are also helping to break the stigma. And it's a lot easier to go to a peer than it is to make a call to someone like Stacy or I, although we do get those calls. But I think the peer support model supports how first responders work, which is ground up a lot of the time. And then the top down has to be supporting what the needs are, and whether it's equipment needs or building needs or mental health of your people needs?
Education, to throw education in there too, because they need to know about post-traumatic stress, depression, alcoholism, suicidal traits.
So next clip will be from Captain Costello from Stanford EMS, and let's take a look.
To first responders about mental health, I would remind them that mental health is health. So there's this stigma out there with health, and we think about things, but I've used this argument with people. Mental health is no different than diabetes. So if you have a deficiency in your brain, then it's a deficiency in your brain. If you have deficiency in your pancreas, you're diabetic. We don't treat diabetics any differently. So if you're struggling with your mental health, go get it treated. Go get help. There are a ton of resources out there. Fairfield County Trauma is amazing. I've used them myself. They're wonderful. And there's no reason not to reach out and get the resources and get the help. Please do.
Well, it's a great analogy. You know, you wouldn't let your diabetes just run wild and expect yourself to be able to, you know, perform at work or be a fun person to be around at home. So, you know, likewise, you really shouldn't let your mental health get too far away from you either, because if you start having symptoms and you're ignoring them, it is going to impact, you know, how you can perform at work, and absolutely is going to affect your family and your friends.
I think a leader, a captain, such as Anne, saying those things gives it more weight. You know, when you hear a superior mm-hmm. who's hired you or who is on the street with you as your supervisor telling you, I've done this, it helped me, and you can model that you're healthy and that you're doing well and people can see that, it gives so much permission and gives light and credence to what we're all trying to do here.
Our next clip is with Malcolm Dean. He's the deputy chief of Stanford EMS, and let's hear what he has to say.
Malcolm, what would you like first responders to know about first responder mental health?
So I think in the years that I've been in this, it's one of the most neglected things. But I think that it's something that we need to not only address, but be a part of and proactively be a part of as service supervisors and people that are in charge of the service. For the people that work in it, it's okay to not be okay. If I can say one thing, it is truly okay to not be okay.
Thank you.
Well, it's refreshing to, you know, hear from somebody so high up and being a deputy chief, a seasoned paramedic, that he's promoting mental health and even giving permission that, you know, realizing that this job will affect you and that it's okay not to be okay. I think that's a healthy message. But then the follow through of, in order to maintain your mental health, you do need to tend to it, you know, and it doesn't mean you have to be in therapy for years and years. You know, I mean, the way Bonnie and I operate doing a type of therapy called EMDR, it could just be a handful of sessions, and then you've kind of cleaned out your closet and you can go back to work and feel fresh. And most importantly, usually your sleep will improve. So
I think it's powerful as well, not just when you see a leader talking so freely and giving permission for mental health support, but for someone who's been in EMS for decades and who came up and was brought up in that first way of we don't talk about it and we brush it mm-hmm. off, for that human being themselves to come to that evolution, I think is incredible. And it shows the possibility, and it shows that he's a living, breathing example of that shift. You know, so the more of those people that we see and look up to, by the way, because I think mm-hmm. the people, especially in EMS, if you've been around 20, 30, 40 years, people really look up to you. They emulate you. You're a model to them. So it's very important how you wield that power. And I can say that just feeling the weight of that a little bit myself, being a past leader. You know, I try to model that it's okay. And how do you take care of yourself? And talking about it. People are probably sick of my Instagram page, but it's constant mental health, you know, messages over and over and over. And so I think somebody, a pillar like Malcolm, saying that is huge.
Great stuff. Seeing the shift, seeing the fact that there's a real support out there for the work that you both are doing, that the Fairfield County Trauma Response Team is doing, and hopefully by extension, what we're doing with this podcast, that we're now, you know, shining a light on this and getting some positive feedback and people that are on board with the whole concept of it's a wellness package, right? It's not just our physical health, but it's our overall wellness.
Yep.
Well, I think that the other part that was incredible about being there is that we really felt like we were equals, right? Like we were just as important as the software company in the next booth or in the ambulance one and the two over. It's like we all make this village, and first responders, providers need every single tool in that village. So I really felt like we were equals there and seen as such, which was really, really great. And I really applaud EMS and Fire Expo for having us in and for recognizing that it's important to have this knowledge and to have the information available for people.
Any final thoughts, Stacey?
I think I want to go next year.
Yeah. All right, we'll have to get a bigger table. Thank you both for sharing your thoughts and views on these clips and on all the other topics we've covered today. It's kind of fun to do this, you know, free ranging, almost like a random episode, but it does have a central theme of the Fire EMS Pro Conference and also mental health and the work that you both are doing and the work that Fairfield County Trauma Response Team is doing. We'll put up some links for anyone that wants to get in contact with any of the organizations that we spoke about. Please take a look at our YouTube channel. It's Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc. and Responder TV, bbsradio.com, all the podcast platforms, and check out our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes, guest information, and you can find out a little more information about Bonnie and Stacey if you want to learn about what they're doing. Until the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself, take care.